Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Professional broadcast tip: never eat peanut butter and crackers immediately before broadcast time, because you find yourself at about 15 seconds before air going, I can't hardly talk. Even if you feel like your blood sugar's dropping out, no, don't do it. This is the Horn. It is the 5th day of May, 2015. Known far and wide, everywhere but Mexico, as Cinco de Mayo, because it's been turned into a marketing gimmick by various purveyors of beer, liquor, tacos, and for all I know, there's a Cinco de Mayo mattress sale somewhere, because the business of America is business. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and participate in the multimedia real-time experience that is the Horn chat room, capably moderated by Lottie and Sparky, who has, being a third-stage field navigator, folded space to become Man Cave this evening. Good evening, one and all. Good evening, Man Cave and Lottie and Jeremy, and good evening to the to others who will wander in fairly short order, I have no doubt. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. It is the day in which we celebrate the right-wing asshattery of the Titanic variety. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. Loud and clear on TuneIn. Much appreciated. At least we don't have a little bit of drama to begin the evening as we did last night.
Whee!
Yeah. With regard to Cinco de Mayo, Jeremy also pointing out, not to mention white people celebrate it, not realizing it's a holiday celebrated for when brown people defeated a bunch of white people. Mexican Independence Day, by the way, for anyone who is paying attention, is September the 16th. And, yes, Mexico is an older... Well, never mind. The official name of Mexico, and I think their governing body, their legislature, finally moved to correct it earlier this year just because they didn't want to be associated with the name. The official constitutional name of Mexico was the United States of Mexico. Mm-hmm. Estados Unidos de México. Yeah, anyway. No, the Cinco de Mayo celebrates a battle in Puebla in which Mexican forces defeated the French forces, the French having decided to invade Mexico? Okay. But anyway, but it was in short order turned into a reason to hustle bad tequila, worse tacos, and, beer. Basically, the capitalists turned it into a Mexican St. Patrick's Day. There you go. It's pretty much barely even noticed in Mexico. But, you know, what? Have your fun. Whatever. No, this is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. It is a day when we celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing. Yes. It said the name coming from something that was heard years ago by our buddy Jim, who heard the local 962nd tier right wing blatherer take a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing, strychnine-handling, serpent-drinking faithful, who asked him, "Steve, why you reckon it is there's seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the ocean." To which he confidently replied, "Caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." No word yet on the movement of the Titanic Pilsner glasses. Sorry. But we celebrate, if that is in fact the appropriate word, right-wing, not your ordinary garden variety right-wing stupid. That's what Moran Monday is for. But the really, really big, mean, hateful stupid. That's what Titanic Tuesday's for. And, yeah, let me go ahead and mention it and get it out of the way. This is a listener-supported operation. It does not continue without you. And we are having, we're trying to continue. And thanks go out this evening to Mr. Gibson and to Chris in Germany, both of whom jumped in to stand side by side with Dale from yesterday evening, as did our buddy Michael, whom we see and saw for the first time in the chat room a couple of days ago. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Mr. Gibson, and thank you, Chris. Between the three of them and Dale from last night, we finished last night only $25 behind. And so this evening, technically, the fundraising goal would be $175. But, all things being equal, it's at everyone's convenience. But, based upon some things that have been said to me in recent weeks, the idea is to get out front. To actually have stuff taken care of so that we're sitting on at least a one-month cushion. So let's go for $175 this evening. If we could make it $350, that would be great. If we could make a week out of it, even more wonderful. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. You can leave the more intrusive fields empty. Just fill in enough information to get to the next page. Just get to the next screen and do what you're going to do from there. Okay, thank you. And if you want to participate via the United States Postal Service, which some folks do, and thank you very kindly to those of you who do, the Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, for instance, every month comes in via the U.S. Postal Service, as do a few others. Thank you very much, one and all, who participate that way. The mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with a reminder that all checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not to Bob Kincaid, please. Okay, so that's out of the way. Whatever happens, happens, and maybe I'll let you know at the end of the program. Titanic Tuesday. Not prayer meeting Wednesday. Nonetheless, this does have this has some Christian overtones. You might remember last night that we spent practically the entire program talking about Pamela Geller and her desire for bloodthirsty free speech. Well, apparently now she's not a Christian, but there is a Christian out there who shares some of her sensibilities. It's just that the target of his hatred isn't Muslims. Well, I mean, I guess some of them could be Muslims. I mean, there are gay Muslims out there. No, this Christian hates gay people. We're talking about what is described as a failed Christian shoe promoter named Randall Herman. He's also a skateboarder, and he bills himself as a game developer. Well, he's developed a game. Apparently, he was trying to build on the success of the Left Behind game from a few years back. It launched on Steam at their downloadable game shop called Greenlight. Don't go looking for it. It is gone. It's been pulled. But before it got pulled, a game critic by the name of Jim Sterling, and this was reported over at Ars Technica, Jim Sterling downloaded it and play tested it. It came from Randall Herman's game shop, which he named Skaldic. Really? Thank you, Goddess of Irony. Skaldic. It's kind of a it's a first-person shooter game that one plays with one's mouse. Here, let's check in on the audio from it, shall we? Do let's. By the way, before we go any further, I should note that the name of the game is Kill the Faggot. How to play. Murder as many gays as you can under the time limit. Fag homo queers are worth 100 points. Transgenders are worth 150 points. Killing a straight person subtracts 100 points. And that's where you click. Okay. Wow, I haven't heard music that cool since my Atari Pong system died.
You wanna chomp my wiener?
Ever visit the city of Butt, Montana? I hear there's a lot of buttholes out there.
Transgender kill. You kill that faggot.
And not the good way. Call me a street and open up my mouth.
Transgender kill. Fag down.
I need to think about this.
Faggot kill.
Get it off.
Straight pride.
Oops. I just dropped the soap!
Bag down.
Can I put my wiener in your buns?
You killed a straight person! You lose points.
Bag it down.
Turn my floppy drive into a hard
drive. AIDS carrier eliminated. Transgender kill. Faggot eliminated.
Yeah. And just a reminder, the game developer is a follower of the Prince of Peace. Yes. No, this is not going to make its way onto any mainstream news reports this evening. It's not going to lead anybody else's program. At best, it will be a kicker on other programs, but I thought we would kick off Titanic Tuesday with it, because it truly is a manifestation of the Titanic bloodthirsty mindset, and we use the word mind loosely, of the right-wing evangelical gundamentalist community. Trying to figure out where this works into the Christian dogma scheme. But I haven't had any luck so far. Then again, this thing has been pulled down from Greenlight, so that means that the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing followers of Christ, with the evangelicals with the great big honkin' persecution complexes, will be having a purple polka-dotted, blue screaming hissy, screaming that, you know, just like Pam Geller, that their free speech rights are being curtailed. Not content to simply be disgusting, the game developer issued a statement. These people think that if you are even remotely homophobic, you are hateful and a bigot, and do everything they can to destroy you in every vicious way possible. So I decided to go down a path that most developers are afraid to go down. To piss these people off by making the most overtly offensive game possible to these idiots to prove a point. Now, just in case you think that I'm being a little over the top by describing this guy as a Christian. Yep, remember, all his sins are forgiven, and he's headed straight to the right hand of God when he shuffles off this mortal coil because he believes all the right stuff. Well, back in 2014, this jackass began a Kickstarter campaign. And in that Kickstarter campaign, he was seeking funding for a skateboarding shoe company. And their mission statement, the name of it was Devotor, D-E-V-O-T-O-R, which spelled backwards is Rotoved. Not that it much matters. But the mission statement of Devotor was, with one goal in mind, to promote the words and teachings of Jesus Christ through quality footwear. What a lovely way to begin Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. No, I won't play the audio again. It was revolting enough as it was. But just remember, there are probably bootlegged copies of this being downloaded in Christian homes all over Merca. Because after all, Wolverines in the name of Jesus. Right? Yeah. So when you don't like the fact that people call you a homophobe and a bigot, the best way to push back against that is to make video games in which you glorify killing people for being gay. The right wing, well, they're not going away anytime soon. And you might not believe it, but they are in the ascendancy. Look, former Arkansas governor and former pastor and former Fox News TV radio Rwanda blatherer Mike Huckabee entered the presidential sweepstakes today. And I did double check to make sure that story about the game wasn't some sort of poorly conceived satire or parody. No, it's for real. I had to do the same thing with this. Now, Mike Huckabee entered the president. Well, let's say he climbed into the Republican presidential clown car today. Let me answer a question from Jeremy real quick. How can this asshole not be talking to Mr. Herman, he of the bad, 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 bad video game, how can this asshole not be facing the justice system for hate speech or not inciting hate crimes? Holy shit, that's just about the worst thing I've listened to. Free speech, my effing ass. Well, see, it works like this. In other parts of the world, they have hate speech crimes, in which doing something like this would get your ass busted right down to the ground. In fact, I was informed after last night's program that, for instance, if Pam Geller tried to take her Muslim-hating shtick on the road to, say, Canada, that she would be busted before she could get the first line out about what an inferior people Muslims are. Just cold busted. The same, I think, applies to the Scandinavian countries and perhaps some of those further south in mainland Europe. It does not apply in the United States, though. In the United States, we interpret the First Amendment to the Constitution as meaning you can be as nasty and vile and hateful and hate-filled and rotten and odious, and did I mention nasty and vile? And yeah, I did. To your heart's content, because it's the greatest country in the world on earth ever now today. because only countries without freedom do something about hate-filled bigots who try to incite people to do massive harm to groups of people who have never done anything to them. So, that's the answer to that question, Jeremy. And these people have to have someone to rally around. For those for whom Rafael Eduardo Cruz is not nutty enough, well, they got their answer today. They got their avatar to follow, I suppose. And I checked this one, too, just because of the title. Why the Republican Party Needs Huckabee Right Now. I double-checked it because it showed up on WashingtonPost.com. And it showed up under the byline, alongside an article, under the byline of Chris Saliza, who is on the TV box all the time and is a real person. Not Epaminondas J. McKillicuddy or anything like that. No, Chris Saliza, who writes, "Every Republican who wants to win back the White House in 2016 and beyond should have stood to applaud Mike Huckabee's announcement Tuesday in Hope, Arkansas, that he was running for president again." Oh, please don't ask me to play that audio. Please. Pretty please. No. Why? And this is what sent me running to double check that this weren't the Onion or the Daily Current or Redneck News or whatever. Why? Because even though Huckabee remains outside of the top tier of candidates, he is... hockey puck, please? Even though Huckabee remains outside of the top tier of candidates, he is by far the Republicans' best messenger to the middle and lower middle classes, economic brackets that the party has struggled to win in recent elections, upon which statement I call bullshit. All kinds of lower middle class to middle class white folks went in droves to vote for Bishop Willard Romney. They just got outvoted, however, in 2012. Then Chris Saliza refers to Huckabee's Southern populism, which he played to great effect during his 2008 campaign, was front and center during his announcement today. He talked about growing up with people who worked so hard they sweated through their clothes. Well, unless you're in space and wearing some sort of pressurized anti-vacuum suit, there's not much you can't sweat through. I mean, even Mrs. G.I. Love Money, when G.I. Love Money comes home, or Mrs. J.P. Got Rocks, I'm sure there's even a little ring around the collar there. Ancient Chinese secret. Some hot shot. Here's his ancient Chinese secret. Calgon. Ay, ay, ay. He reminisced about a childhood spent with fishing poles and firearms. Wolverines! Yeah. And in the speech's rousing conclusion, Huckabee delivered a double-barreled assault on elites. Oh, thanks for the eliminationist metaphor there, Chris. Don't know what we would have done without it. I don't come from a family dynasty. but from a working family, the millionaire said. No, Saliza doesn't call him a millionaire. I grew up blue collar, not blue blood. Of course, that dynasty business is a dig at the Bushes and a dig at Hillary. But Bill wasn't exactly blue blood neither. Don't you love that, though? Isn't that a knee slapper? Is there going to be, by the time the clown car circus is done, is there going to be a drinking game where every time the millionaire Mike Huckabee says blue collar, everybody has to drink? Strychnine? Yes, Marty. He is a member of the elite. He's rich as shit. Coming from Huckabee, those messages sound genuine. To whom? To what creature that just snuck out of a bell jar at the Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium does that sound genuine? Whether it's his southern twang, his skills at plain-spokenness, or perhaps most simply because they are true. And Chris Saliza knows they're true how? Because he read God, Guns, Guts, and Gonorrhea, or whatever it was, that latest book of Hucksterby's? Oh, finally we get to, and yes, I'm aware that Huckabee is no longer middle class or anything close to it. Then why did you write it? But somehow or another, Mike Huckabee, I guess, is going to become a kingmaker because he has the power to bring along the stump liquor vote. You know, I enjoyed the time I spent working in Washington, D.C. on the ACAC. But something like this makes me awfully glad that I didn't stick around and I came home more often than not. You know, never spent more than a couple of weeks there at a time. Because apparently inside the Beltway there in D.C., things take on a separate reality? I mean, among other things, if you have ever seen Mike Huckabee speechify, he doesn't have a southern twang. He has the deliberately taught Midwestern broadcast standard dialect that is taught in seminary, especially Baptist seminary, speech and communication classes. He has stentorian down to a science, and he can deliver a stem winder, but he's not throwing around a bunch of ain'ts and gimmies and gits, and he pronounces O-I-L as oil, not all. Now, I reckon. Now, see, that's a twang. Now, I suppose, were he to get a snootful of Keystone Light, which he would never do, because he is a follower of Christ Jesus and a Baptist, I suppose Mike Huckabee might eventually start getting a little bit twangy. It happens under the right, or wrong, depending on how one views it, influences. That's hilarious, though. The Republicans' best messenger to the middle and lower classes. You know, the rubes. Yes, come here right now. All you have to do is spot the queen. The queen's right in front of you, see? Two cards aren't a queen, the other one's a queen. All you gotta do is find the queen. Yeah, that's the message to the masses from Mike Huckabee. Who, incidentally, you might be interested to know, upon announcing his candidacy, said, "I will be funded and fueled not by the billionaires, but by working people, who will find out that $15 and $25 a month contributions can take us from hope," meaning Hope, Arkansas, "from hope to higher ground." And then he added to laughter, "Now, rest assured, if you want to give $1 million, please do it." And in that moment, Mike Huckabee violated federal campaign law, what little bit is left of it. Maybe he can file a Supreme Court challenge and give the rats on the Supreme Court an opportunity to once and for all just finish the job and rule that money is people. Money has rights, damn it! But no, nobody can give Mike Huckabee $1 million. And seeking it is arguably an illegal act. No surprise for an evangelical fundamentalist Christian. If you have ever sat during the offering in a Southern Baptist church like the one presided over by Mike Huckabee, you know they can wring some money out of the pockets. They're not pissants like me who feels rotten for asking people to contribute to keep this little broadcast operation on the air. No, we're talking about people who will gladly ring out little old ladies for their Social Security checks. Not some of them, all of them. The checks, not the little old ladies. Not all little old ladies are that gullible. But yes, he was raised with firearms because Wolverines! I imagine there's been one or there's more than one or two cries of Wolverines down in Texas as Greg Abbott and the state guard, and I didn't realize there was a difference between the National Guard in Texas and the state guard. What the hell are they? But he called, remember, he called them out to keep an eye on the Green Berets and the Navy SEALs in case the Navy SEALs and Green Berets get all froggy during their Jade Helm exercise. Yeah. Because, that Obama's going to... They got so many military bases down there in Texas that there Obama, at the stroke of a pen, he can order the army to occupy Texas and come and take away everybody's God-given right, firearms. And there goes your freedom. Yeah, they're still worked up. Greg Abbott. Chuck Norris. And the great Walmart tunnel conspiracy. Whoop! But Texas isn't the only place that kind of thing takes shape, takes form. Out in Carlisle County, Kentucky, which is in the western part of the Commonwealth, there's a little church in the Wildwood called Bardwell Baptist Church. And this past weekend at Bardwell Baptist Church, they were celebrating the duly, godly ordained union of one man and one woman at the Bardwell Baptist Church. And invited to attend was, this is not a joke, invited to attend was Detective Corey Golightly. A distant nephew of Holly Golightly, for all I know. Oh, Detective Corey Golightly attended the God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding Christian nuptials there at Bardwell Baptist Church in Carlisle County. And Detective Corey Golightly is a sheriff's deputy with the McCracken County Sheriff's Department. I said McCracken, not McCracker, damn it. Quit it. But anywho, Detective Corey Golightly of the McCracken County Sheriff's Department was a-going to the wedding, and you know how it is in weddings in Kentucky. You never know when the ISIS is going to show up to do some Christian head-lopping, wedding head-lopping. Yeah? Yeah. Well, see, the piano player had gotten to tickling the ivories and was playing the piano music that goes on before a good Baptist wedding and before the vows and the reception and the sherbet and ginger ale Baptist wedding punch. It ain't got no booze in it. And there ain't no dancing neither, damn it. And the piano player was tinkling along when all of a sudden she said, well, my initial reaction was, oh, my goodness, could that possibly be a gun? Because she heard a gun go off, Janine King did. And she said, then my next thought was, gosh, who's in the church with a gun? Oh, sugar. I'm sure that half of that joyful congregation or more was all gunned up because, well, it's nice if Jesus protects you, but God helps those who help who arm themselves, right? Yeah, she was tinkling along at the piano, and all of a sudden the gun goes off, and somebody in a white jacket with a Humphrey Bogart impression comes up and says, I thought I told you never to play that song. No, it wasn't the piano player what was getting shot at. Because it turns out that Detective Corey Golightly of McCracken County Sheriff's Department had gone to adjust his coat or hitch up his trousers or reattach his galluses or whatever they do out there over in Carlisle County, Kentucky, which is right next door to nearby McCracken County. And when he went to hitch up his trousers or adjust his jacket or reattach his galluses, well, that's when the freedom protector and public service tool fell plumb right out of his jacket and hit the ground and fired and discharged the weapon into Detective Golightly's mama. Mother Golightly is at present listed in stable condition in a Nashville, Tennessee area hospital. The McCracken County Sheriff's Department is declining any requests for comment. And right after he shot her, because he's raised right, Detective Golightly rendered first aid to Mama. That shows he's a good boy. Mm-hmm. And he did. As soon as the gun fell and went off, and he freedom protected her, he hollered, "Mama!" Because he had shooted her. Gosh, who's in the church gun? That's really a loaded question in 2015 in a place like Kentucky, Stan. Preacher, associate minister, minister of music, groom, best man, bridesmaids may have one of them gun bras. Mm-hmm. You know, coming down the aisle there, it might have been a dead giveaway, because instead of asking bride or groom for which side of the room you were seated on, no, it was single action, double action. Well, you know, accidents happen, right? Because stupid. Now, don't worry. Detective Go Lightly will probably not face any kind of punishment. So just don't you worry. It's not like Deputy Golightly is going to get fired, as did Deputy Gene Lopez down in of the Lee County, Florida Sheriff's Department, because what Deputy Golightly did was clearly an accident, because you don't go to a wedding there at the Bridal and Snap Baptist Church aiming to shoot mama, one hopes. But Deputy Gene Lopez was fired last month after he posted racist language on his Facebook page. He viewed a photo of a person who customizes automobiles bragging about the quality of his customization work. I actually saw this video. And for certain people, his language was difficult to understand. You'll notice I just said that without managing to be racist. On the other hand, viewing the self-same video, Deputy Gene Lopez of the Lee County, Florida, Lee County, by the way, unless I'm mistaken, is up by Dixie County, in case you were wondering. Or is that Levy County? Yeah, oh, well. Yeah, maybe, I But having witnessed the video, Deputy Lopez then posted it and wrote, "Can someone please tell me what the blank, what the fuck, this monkey is saying?" That's right. He exercised his rights to free speech, and they persecuted him for it. When clearly he ain't no racist. Lee County Sheriff Mike Scott said, "It's not acceptable, and that's why he's out of a job." Now, Mr. Lopez did try to defend himself, saying that he and his friends used that term, monkey, whenever they wanted to describe something stupid. It didn't work for Howard Cosell either. Back in March 2014, a little over a year ago, he was also investigated for the shooting of Joshua Young. Allegations were that Mr. Young had tried to run over the deputies, and when the deputies shot him, they determined that was okay. He was also reprimanded for getting involved in a domestic dispute in 2009 while he was off duty. And in 2008, he was reprimanded over money, and in 2008 he was arrested but not charged for threatening to kill his wife. Now, neighbor Dennis Sweeney is upset that Deputy Lopez done been fired. He said he has an opinion like anybody else. Just because he's a deputy don't mean he can't say his opinion, I don't think. Somebody get Pam Geller on the line. If only the sheriff who fired him had been a Muslim. Murka. Indeed. Murka. So let's take a little toddle a little further. Well, yeah, okay, we went Texas. Hey, yeah, Texas, Huckabee, Texas, no. I don't know where the video came from, but then Kentucky, Florida. Pretty soon we're going to have a pentagram drawn over the United States because we're headed to Indianistan, Talibandiana. And this is disgusting. This is gross. Yes, gross. They had a hearing in Jefferson County. I'm guessing Kentucky, but the guy's from Indiana. The guy in question is a 34-year-old fellow by the name of Joseph Oberhansley. Story coming from the Louisville Courier-Journal. And this is the criminal justice portion of this story, of this saga of Joseph Oberhansley. It was last year when he was interviewed by police, and Joseph Oberhansley admitted that he murdered his ex-girlfriend, Tammy Jo Blanton. Stabbed her to death. Yep. After stabbing her to death, however, he used an electric jigsaw to open her skull, ate parts of her brain, and then snacked on her heart and lung. Well, the prosecutor in the case, Jeremy Mull, did what a good prosecutor should, and there was a full post-mortem. I mean, stab wounds and having your skull sawed open is probably a pretty good indication of cause of death, but you really want to know all of these things when it's going to come to trial. So they ran tests to see if the victim had been sexually assaulted as well. Prosecutor Jeremy Mull said, I think during the course of the autopsy, we took some steps to determine whether or not there had been a sexual assault, and as the investigations continued, it became clear to us that it did, so we amended the charge. They went into court on a motion to amend the charges to include not just murdering the woman and eating her brains, heart, and lung, but to include a charge of rape. Yeah, I know. This, however, supremely pissed off Joseph Oberhansley. In court, he looked at Judge Vicki Carmichael and said, I've never seen such bullshit. Excuse my language. They keep falsifying shit. and went on to explain that he was too handsome, too good-looking, to have raped the corpse of his ex-girlfriend, whose brain, heart, and one lung he snacked upon. Like I said, this is a gross and disgusting story. I'm ruining somebody's dinner right now. God, sorry, Scott and Linda. And others. Now, some of you may be thinking, hey, you've already got murder here. You've got a charge of dismemberment. He crept into her house, so you probably got a burglary, or at least a nighttime breaking without entering, or maybe an entering without breaking, but you got something. Why the rape charge? Well, one, because he did it, allegedly, and it is therefore a suitable charge, but also because, and this one just kind of, this is where my skin started crawling, they want the death penalty. And apparently, just having murdered her ain't enough to achieve it. Now, we all know how I feel about the death penalty. And this is not going to be a death penalty discussion. But in order to And the reporting is not entirely clear, because I don't necessarily know the geography. I don't know if this is taking place in Indiana or Kentucky. They share a common border, you know, with a river running through it. But regardless, whichever state it is, straight up premeditated murder is apparently not enough to get you the death penalty. You've got to show that there were aggravating circumstances. And those aggravating circumstances include dismemberment, burglary, or rape. And what? The prosecutor is worried that the evidence of him using a jigsaw to cut open his ex-girlfriend's head and eat her brain and her heart and her lung, that's not enough? No, you do it because rapes should be charged. But merciful, these states are generally into their death penalty. I guess I'm just a little surprised. By the way, along about the same time that Mr. Oberhansley was complaining that he's a brain eater and not a rapist, he also noted that he is a righteous man. He's a righteous dude. No, he's a righteous man. But see, that he didn't use a gun, so that just proves that we don't need anything. We don't need any laws again in this country to protect against gun violence. See? When jigsaws are outlawed, the only brain eaters who have jigsaws will be outlaw brain eaters. What? I don't know that we've ever had a Titanic Tuesday that turned into a Titanic Dead Folks Tuesday. But this is that. From the Kentucky-Indiana border area, we'll zoom down to Oklahoma Stan, where Shayna Smith has been charged by the judicial system there, such as it is. Shayna Smith is facing charges of illegal dissection of a human body . She went to the funeral of a 38-year-old woman who was the former girlfriend of Shayna Smith's present boyfriend. Getting lost? I'm trying to keep this all together here. And she slashed the corpse from her hairline to the tip of her nose. Then she cut her hair. And stole her shoes. According to KJRH Television, Tulsa police say that Shayna Smith took her shoes and then went to the family of the deceased and asked for some of her jewelry, according to the police report, under the pretense that she was sent there to receive jewelry so that she could take it back and put it on the deceased for viewing. Merciful God. I know. They're just isolated stories, right? Could happen anywhere. I mean, this probably happens every other day in rural France and rural Germany and rural England and rural Japan. Sure. Why not? Only a dozen. This is one of those ongoing Merca problems. Because, you know, after all, we are the greatest country in the world on earth today, now, ever. Reckon folks in Tulsa are rethinking cremation now? Now, where all have we been? Texas?
Uh-huh.
Florida, Kentucky, Indiana, Oklahoma, Any commonality there? Yeah, well, kind of. Those would be what are traditionally referred to as red states, are they not? Now, granted, the Old Dominion, Virginia, at present has two Democratic senators and a Democratic governor, but they got a right smart handful of repig-licking members of the Congress and a whole bunch of them in their state legislature. Enter State Delegate Highland Buddy Fowler Jr. He done got caught making a Facebook post. And his Facebook post showed a masked, helmeted, black-clothed, SWAT-garbed police officer of some sort holding a solid black, snarling, dripping-fanged police dog lunging at its leash, a meme that reads, "Go ahead and run. He likes fast food." Well, Buddy Fowl, and by the way, that came from an outfit, a website called Police One. "Go ahead and run. He likes fast food." I wonder why Police One didn't put that meme up, maybe with a picture of the snarling dogs in Birmingham. Because it's the same idea, isn't it? This is the people at Police One celebrating the idea of turning viciously trained attack dogs on people, well, on people. Because that happens in fascist countries, and hey, this is one. So that's what the photograph is, and we're talking about a picture, and I realize it's like dancing about architecture, but you get the idea. So Buddy Fowler, that would be Virginia House of Delegates, Delegate Highland Buddy Fowler Jr., because we don't want to mix him up with Buddy Fowler Sr. Buddy Fowler posted it to his Facebook page. See, this here is, again, what you call a twang. And it's what Mike Huckstrebe ain't got one of. But Delegate Highland Buddy Fowler Jr. posted it to his Facebook page with his own editorial comment, which reads as follows. I mean, don't worry, this is a right winger, this is a Republican. We're not talking about paragraphs here. It's a one sentence statement. So with the picture of the vicious dog straining at its lead, trying to go after someone, Virginia Republican State Delegate Highland Buddy Fowler Jr. asks, "I wonder if a few of these would help bring calm to Baltimore." See, that's what the police need in Baltimore. They need to just turn some attack dogs loose to maul and maim and attack and tear the hide off of some of them protesters and get them, because they's all uppity and they don't know their place, and they need to get back off the streets and riot. He has yet, Buddy Fowler Jr., to make any sort of comment about his post, but he did try to disappear it. And then he scrubbed everything else, too, because he must have had some doozies on there. He scrubbed everything on his Facebook page going back to July 2014. State Senator A. Donald McEachin, a Democrat from Virginia, said, "I don't know whether he thinks it's a joke or funny, but what I do know is that it is insensitive, unhelpful, and in total disregard for the difficult situation facing the citizens of Baltimore and, honestly, the public safety officers. As Baltimore residents express their frustration and anger over the death of an unarmed citizen, and as police struggle to maintain order in these difficult times, Delegate Fowler chooses to exacerbate a tense and very difficult situation with his idea of humor, if one can even stoop to call it that." Well, of course you call it humor, Senator McEachin, because I'm sure that Delegate Buddy Highland Buddy Fowler Jr. is a Christian. And everybody knows that one of the things that sets the Christians apart from the Muslims, who are inferior, by the way, is the fact that Christians have a sense of humor. And that's what he was doing. He was showing his Christian sense of humor. Whew. Busy night. Very busy night. And sad to say, well, not sad to say, I mean, I'd hate to just turn everything off and hang it up, but we ain't done. So we had the two stories about the deputies, one of whom was in Florida, Stan. Let's go and check in on another little chunk of sunny Florida. Shall we? This is the story of Alyssa Alvarez and Jose Caballero. They were apparently, shall we say, besotted with one another. Back last July, they got arrested. They got arrested because some other beachgoers were deeply offended by the fact that Alyssa Alvarez, age 20, and Jose Caballero, age 40, were engaged in some, and it's apparently more than just a drink, and I won't say cocktail, it is, they were engaged in having sex on the beach. Happened. I mean, Jesus, didn't From Here to Eternity with that steamy, for the time, black and white beach scene win an Academy Award or something? Well, law enforcement and prosecution in Cortez Beach, Florida, wants America to understand that they will not be tolerating any any sexy time on the beach. Because the woman who videotaped them was not that far off. And the woman who videoed them was not that far off. And kept her camera trained on them as they had their beach sexy time. And immediately, well, then after they were done with sexy time, she said they just, it was like they passed out, which people do. And then they was asleep. We thought they was dead. And then they woke back up and took to doing it again. And the children's was there. The cheerin's was seeing it. Oh, my gracious. Whatever shall we tell the children? The Bradenton Herald has the coverage. And so you'd think, okay, so they got, then they got up to doing the sexy time again, and that's when the good God-fearing, upstanding Bible-believing Merkins declared that they had done had enough, and they called the police, and the police come and arrested them and carried them away. Dateline Manatee, Florida. After only... Wait a minute. I don't know if Barbie's listening or not, but still. After only 15 minutes of deliberation, a jury Monday found a couple guilty of having sex on Bradenton Beach. The convictions can carry a maximum prison sentence of 15 years. What?! No, really. Jose Caballero, 40, and Alyssa Alvarez, 20, were charged with two counts each of lewd and lascivious behavior for having sex on a public beach, July 20th, 2014. That's the way it was. Video played in the courtroom during the one-and-a-half-day trial showed Alvarez moving on top of Caballero in a sexual manner in broad daylight. Witnesses testified a 3-year-old girl saw them. Probably because the 3-year-old girl couldn't testify because the 3-year-old girl doesn't even remember it. And it didn't much matter to her because she didn't understand it anyway. Here's the out-of-control criminal justice system. Caballero and Alvarez will now have to register as sex offenders. They'll go on the sex offender registry alongside, you know, people, you know, guys who prey upon and fuck little boys, you know, priests and stuff. Assistant State Attorney Anthony DaFonseca said they will pursue a harsher sentence for Caballero than Alvarez, since Alvarez has no prior record and Caballero spent almost 8 years in prison for a cocaine trafficking conviction. Wait a minute. Time out. Stop. You can get less time in the Florida pen for trafficking in cocaine than you can for fucking on the beach? Yes! Because Florida's tough on crime! Caballero's looking at serving the maximum time of 15 years after being out of prison less than 3 years before committing another felony. Because having sex on a beach is a felony. Well, you know what I say to that? When having sex on the beach is outlawed, then only... Oh, never mind. DaFonseca, who is not at all any kind of sexual prude or fascinated by any sort of this sort of stuff, said, we gave them a reasonable offer, what we felt was reasonable, and they decided it wasn't something they wanted to accept responsibility for, despite the video, despite all the witnesses. And guess what? The judge has no discretion. Mr. Caballero is going to go to prison for 15 years in the state of Florida for having sex with someone who consented, who was on top. I mean, this isn't even one of those places where a Republican can say, I wonder if it was a legitimate rape. It wasn't. They were two drunk people into each other. I mean, Jesus Christ, when Granny caught the dogs getting it on in the yard, she just threw cold water on them. She didn't shoot them.
When asked why the case was important to the state attorney, DaFonseca said the community must know such behavior isn't tolerated on public beaches. We're dealing with basically tourists that came from Brandon and Riverview, and oh no! Now I understand why.
We're dealing with basically tourists that came from Brandon and Riverview in West Virginia, and they're here on the beaches of Manatee County, our public beaches.
He was referring to the witnesses who testified against the beach.
bumpers. A hillbilly dropped the dime on him. Now, if they'd had a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Scots-Irish name, well, hell, he's just a little high-spirited. Happens up a holler all the time. Up there by the sludge dam. De Fonseca continued, see, you want to make sure that this isn't something that just goes by the wayside. And that is, it is well known to the community what will be tolerated and what won't be. How did we get to this place in America where instead of just walking, you know, having the cop walk up, hey, come on, have some dignity, get out of here, rent a room. Nope, by God, now it's a 15-year felony. Manatee County, Jay Cruzan, Manatee County. Jay Cruzan asking, where in Florida was this? Manatee County. Now, why do these people have to? Why? 15 years in prison. And you ever wonder? You ever wonder what Prosecutor De Fonseca gets up to? Nah, of course not. But why? Well, here's the why. Because, see, we have, in this country, a prison industrial complex. And the for-profit corporations that run the prison industrial complex for the several states who have them, well, they've got a deal that says the prisons have to be at 100% capacity. Hell, they have auctions. They have prisoner auctions. I'm not kidding. And if there is not 100% capacity in the for-profit prisons, then the state is contractually obliged to pay huge penalties to the corporation. Because you see, justice, if that word is even real anymore, justice the greatest country in the world on earth now, ever, today, has been commodified. It's another thing for corporate America and the shareholders to make a profit from. And Emory and Eileen helped drop the dime on him. Of course, Emory and Eileen never knew that they were going to get 15 years out of it. The jury doesn't get told that kind of thing. Give this story about a week. By that time, the former governor, Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda blatherer, will be talking about this as a sign of the moral decay in our country as it has slipped away from the Judeo-Christian principles upon which this great nation was founded. Bet me. Thank you, Arthur. Slight differentiation in language. Arthur prefers,
the greatest country God has ever given man on the face of the earth.
I don't know. You can vote for your preference. Sex offenders. Because, of course, in addition to the whole, we've got the prison industrial complex, those beds don't fill themselves concept, in addition to that, there's the fact that this is the most prudish, hung up, oppressed, repressed country in the world. I remember a buddy of mine traveled to Germany a few years ago. Good West Virginia fellow. And he was amazed when he went to Germany. Because he said, over there, well, they don't give, if you're in a public park and you're just a fucking away, they don't give a damn. Ain't gonna bother you. But by God, if your parking meter runs down to zero, you have a problem. Because they got a saying over there, Ordnung muss sein. Order must be. Makes me wonder. Makes me wonder if we've gotten around to having 15-year sexy time felonies here in almost level west by Cole, Virginia stand. But here we are, 22 minutes past the hour, and I've been filibobstering for a while. Probably ought to open the phone lines, and you are welcome to participate if you so choose. The one we called Harold is we used to call it Skype line, but it confused people. Call it Harold now. That's 304-574-8178. The Gizmo line we now call Maud. That's 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. You can reach the program Skype to Skype at Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. BobKincaid@gmail.com, same spelling, except the horn part, is the email address. And if you want to reach me via Twitter, @BobKincaid, reach me on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. Okay? Okay. So, among other things, we've got the Green News Report coming up, being as how it is Tuesday. And we'll take a little break, see who wants to talk about what. And it's entirely a matter of your preference. And Lord God, there's more stuff. There's more stuff. This is Conversation Radio. This is Conversation Radio that you keep going. It is not self-perpetuating or self-sustaining. It's y'all. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
About 3 months ago, I was in Rome, Italy, not New York. I don't know what I was doing there. I was just there. I got this sandwich one day, and they gave me a newspaper with it. It was the only newspaper they had there that was in English. And they had all the news from all around the world just crammed into four pages. Didn't even have any funnies in there. You know, every time you turn a page, something just jumped right out at you. You know? So I found an old friend in there, and I wrote her a song. It's for Dear Abby.
dear Abby, my feet are too long. My hair's falling out and my rights are all wrong. My friends, they all tell me they have no friends at all. Won't you write me a letter? Won't you give me a call? Signed, Bewildered. Bewildered, bewildered, you have no complaint. You are what you are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Dear Abby, my fountain pen leaks. My wife hollers at me and my kids are all freaks. Every side I get up on is the wrong side of the bed. If it weren't so expensive, I'd wish I were dead. Signed, Unhappy. Unhappy, unhappy, you have no complaint. You are what you are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Dear Abby, dear Abby, dear Abby, you won't believe this, but my stomach makes noises whenever I kiss. My girlfriend tells me it's all in my head, but my stomach tells me to write you instead. Sign, Noisemaker. Noisemaker, noisemaker, you have no complaint. You are what you are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knock no wood. Dear Abby, well I never thought that me and my girlfriend would ever get caught. We were sitting in the back seat just shooting the breeze, with her hair up in curlers and her pants to her knees. Signed, Just Married. Just married, just married, you have no complaint. You are what you are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Signed, Dear Abby.
It's Tuesday, May 5th, 2015.
The 2016 race for the Republican presidential nomination just doubled in size.
Maybe those things aren't scientific. Maybe it's just propaganda.
Fox News darling Ben Carson jumps in.
If we want to accept the science, we have to read the fine print.
Former CEO Carly Fiorina jumps in.
The beheading is a far greater threat to an American than a sunburn.
Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee jumps in. Climate change deniers all. Plus, the Pope's moral message on climate change.
All of those messages, moral and immoral, straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
What all the scientists also tell us is that a single state or a single nation acting alone can make no difference at all.
No, that's not what they say.
That's what the scientists say.
Sorry, Carly, you're wrong. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, before we get to the latest pack of deniers to join the 2016 presidential race, I want to take a moment to bow my head, if you will, to someone who is not a denier, Pope Francis. They have just finished their climate summit at the Vatican. and the Pontifical Academies of Sciences and Social Sciences has released a statement saying, quote, "In the face of the emergencies of human-induced climate change, we join together to declare that human-induced climate change is a scientific reality, and its decisive mitigation is a moral and religious imperative for humanity."
Wow.
Could you hear the heads at Fox News exploding left and right when the Pope said that?
And actually, a Cardinal Peter Turkson at the Vatican went even further. He said, quote, "A crime against the natural world is a sin, and to cause species to become extinct is a sin." That's a pretty big statement.
Oh, sin. Now they're really going to have trouble with this at Fox News. I guess they'll just start ignoring it. That may be the best thing. But we won't ignore the new Republican nominees for the 2016 presidential election, and I think that's where we go today.
Oh, yes. Three more Republicans are now jumping into the race. They are retired surgeon and Fox News darling Ben Carson, former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, Carly Fiorina, and former Arkansas governor-turned-Fox News host, Mike Huckabee. Now, you may be shocked to learn that those three new contenders stand firmly in the climate science denial camp.
What?
In print interviews, retired surgeon Ben Carson agrees with Republican senators and candidates Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and Rand Paul that the climate is changing, but that's because the climate is always changing, and it's not human caused, so we should keep burning fossil fuels.
So at least they believe climate is changing. They just think it's just a coincidence that it happens to be going on.
That's right. On Meet the Press back in March, Carson said that even though he doesn't accept the science of evolution, science should still inform policy. But then he suggested it depends on whose science.
People say, how can you be a scientist? How can you be a surgeon if you don't believe in certain things? Maybe those things aren't scientific. Maybe it's just propaganda.
Maybe. Maybe they are. Maybe that's what he's saying. Maybe. Maybe he's got it right and you've got it wrong, Desi Doyen. And maybe I think I'll choose another surgeon if I need any medical care.
Former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina says if climate change is human-caused, the U.S. should not lead on cutting emissions because it will hurt our economy because China won't follow along.
Do we really think the Chinese are going to follow our lead on this? No, they're not going to follow our lead because they're focused on their own economic self-interest.
Yeah, actually, yes, they are not only following our lead, they are leading us. Since the deal that they made with Barack Obama,
6 months ago he made that.
She said this after the deal had already been made?
She said this last month, and it was 6 months ago that President Obama signed that historic emissions reductions deal with China.
And they are leading. They are going right now much farther than we are as a country. Within the next 13 years, I think it is, they are going to build a United States worth of renewable energy.
That's
if
right.
If they can do it, we can do it. But not if we have, clueless, failed CEOs like Carly Fiorina running for president.
As for former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, he questions the global scientific consensus that the rise in global temperatures is caused by burning fossil fuels. At the Iowa Freedom Summit in January, he said ISIS is the bigger threat.
He said the greatest threat this nation faces is climate change. But, Mr. President, I believe that most of us would think that a beheading is a far greater threat to an American than a sunburn. I wish he understood that we have a real enemy.
And I wish that Mike Huckabee understood that a hell of a lot more Americans have already died thanks to climate change and certainly will die thanks to climate change than will die from beheadings. For much more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh yeah, you got your own version of the truth. There's only three things left now. Deny.
26 minutes before the hour, a little bit over halfway through this Titanic Tuesday edition of The Horn. I am Bob Kincaid, and let's run over to the Gizmo line, Maud, and could it be John? Oh, must have lost him. Okay, well, both lines are open then. You pick. Either one is fine by me. Let's see. What else? Well, there's more than a couple. God knows. This is where it gets difficult because we haven't even. Tapped into last night's leftovers. This is all fresh. So, from where were we last? Florida. And by the way, I don't know, Jay Cruz. I don't know if I would admit this if I were you, but hell, Bob, I have hours and hours of porn on my hard drive of sex on the beach here in South Florida. I'm sure this was not the first time that that has ever happened in the 10,000 years or more of human occupancy of the Florida Peninsula. But by God, Prosecutor De Fonseca, he's drawing a line in the sand. Oh, dear. I just had to do that, didn't I? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, it is, like I said, we're about halfway through the program. Absolutely not a blessed single contribution has come in. And, you know, I guess it's a pity that I can't threaten with eternal damnation or promises of heavenly rewards or anything. All I can tell you is that contributions are how this program remains on the air. There are no advertisers. There's no money coming in from other sources. I mean, you might hear the intro that says brought to you by Cold River Mountain Watch. Well, that's because a long, long time ago, we did receive a little bit of financial support from Cold River Mountain Watch. As sort of a way of outreach to tell people about the Appalachian apocalypse. That hasn't happened in years. But I'm not going to take that out of the intro because it's still important to me that people know that there is an Appalachian uprising. But the only thing that keeps us on the air is you. And the bills that have to be... never mind. You know, look, if it goes away, it goes away. Limbaugh reruns for everybody, right? Anyway, let's run over to Nevada. And a story of two people who were not having sex on the beach. In fact, a story of two people who weren't having sex at all. Uh-oh, it's a story of two guys, two males. Ooh. But this story has a twist. And it has a kind and a decent and a genuine and an inspiring twist on the front end. A little while back, a video went viral when one teenager, asked another teenage guy to prom. Jacob Leshinsky made a video in which he asked Anthony Martinez to go to prom with him. The video was really cute. There was a big banner. And here's the twist. The banner reads, "You're hella gay, I'm hella straight, but you're like my brother. So hey, date? Or so be my date?" Yeah. Jacob Leshinsky, straight guy, asked his best friend, Anthony Martinez, who happens to be gay, to go to prom with him. Because Anthony, since he's gay, had never had a date for the prom. I admit, I hollered to Agnes and showed her the story, and we both got a little verklempt. It's sweet. It's good. It is a welcoming account in the midst of so many other horrifying ones that are there for the finding on any given day. Of course, as the saying goes, no good deed goes unpunished. Now, it really was. There was a video of the two guys going to pick out tuxes because they're going to the prom. So then, Anthony Martinez's auntie, Jennifer Sandoval, well, she wanted to be part of it too, and she wanted to get a cake. And she wanted writing on the cake. And the minute that I said cake, the rest of you went, oh, no, really? A cake. Yeah, a cake. But, you know, she didn't go to Christian Wedding Chapel Cakes of Las Vegas. Because I'm guessing Auntie Jennifer Sandoval knew better. No, she went to the most ubiquitous, money-grubbing, miserable capitalist retailer on earth. That's right, Jennifer Sandoval went to Walmart. And the writing on the cake was to be, "You're gay, he's straight, you're going to prom, you couldn't have had a better date." And they got a cake big enough for all that writing. She showed it to the person in the bakery, said, "This is what I want on the cake." Person in the bakery said, "Uh-uh, I can't write that on the cake." Well, see, there I go with the accent, with the southern twang again. Maybe they don't have those in Las Vegas. "I can't write that on the cake." "Why not?" "Well, it's got the word gay in it. And that's against store policy." Oh, dear. So, Jennifer Sandoval, not being one to take no for an answer, especially when she's trying to celebrate such a decent, charming, wonderful, affirming moment, she said, "I want to talk to your supervisor." So, the supervisor, and she's apparently written down on the notes section of her phone or whatever, what she wants to go on the cake. She shows her phone to the supervisor, and she says, "Supervisor takes my phone, looks at it, was like stuck for a minute, and she was like, oh, okay, I'm sorry, we can't use this." So then Jennifer Sandoval says, "I'm going to ask you what I asked her, because you're the supervisor, why can't I use this? I don't understand. It's one word. It's gay." One word, gay, which is the meaning of happy, isn't going to harm putting that on a cake. But no, the Walmart supervisor and the Walmart underling dug their heels in, and she wound up with a cake that says, "You matter, prom kings." Which is a hell of a far cry from the sentiment that she wanted to express on the cake in the first place. Now, anybody who knows anything at all about Wally World knows that they're a little bit like God, in that at some point in the Gospels, Jesus says, "Not a sparrow falls to the earth, but your Father in heaven doesn't know it." Walmart's like that. Nothing happens in a Walmart anywhere. But the pricks in Bentonville know about it. Oh, I'm sorry, did I say the pricks in Bentonville? I meant the corporate customer service specialists, executives in Bentonville, Arkansas. Ms. Sandoval said it wasn't hurtful the way they did it. It was not the way they did it. Talking about, you know, you're gay, putting gay on the cake. It wasn't hurtful. It was to make my nephew happy, to see a smile on his face. I love that smile. To see that smile, that's all I wanted. And I'm disappointed. I really am. But the news got back to Bentonville in a straight-up hurry. And suddenly, they were on the phone, Bentonville was, the Department of Cake, the Vice President in charge of cake decorating or whatever. They were on the phone with KVVU-TV. Explaining that back here in Bentonville, we just want you to let your viewers know that we've investigated the incident. Yeah, that's it. Here it is. Yeah, we've investigated. Let me get the script. We've investigated the incident. And okay, so that's in the, and there's the arrow and it goes and it turns and okay, next box. And we have found arrow, next box. The initial employee, arrow, next box, if then, didn't contact proper management. If proper management not contacted yet, proper management contacted, yes, no, that didn't. Proper management contacted, no. Our store policy does not say that the word gay can't be written on a cake. Because there in Bentonville, they went into sweat condition alpha. Because America's most merciless, relentless, remorseless grubber of money corporation was not about to have the gay community get after them about a damn cake. Because they didn't want any of that Talibandiana bullshit going on, because they're Walmart and all they give a goddamn about is money. Employees, come. Money. Show me the money. I got a cake, you got the money. And, of course, a store manager also tried to contact Sandoval to make this wrong right, according to KVVU, but Sandoval said this gesture came a little too late. Because all of a sudden, the Walton heirs and their minions who run the joint had visions of thousands of people carrying rainbow flags walking around corporate headquarters in Bentonville, setting up protests at the Walmart in Elk Snort, Tennessee, and Busted Knuckle, West Virginia, and Las Vegas, goddamn Nevada. I wonder if this is the same Walmart where the Bundyites blew away the police. Don't know. But corporate was on it, except for the fact that they didn't quite clear out, they didn't make the stupid, or they didn't make things clear enough to the stupid. I'd like to know the answer to the question for the bakery person. Was that a Christian, or was that somebody who was simply afraid of authority, who can't afford to lose his or her shitty little $9 an hour job that they get 27 hours a week for, and no benefits,
and no health care and no goddamn retirement. Don't know, because that much is not made clear. But we do know that Walmart wants you to understand that they're not some Christian bakery that won't, you know what? They won't deliver anywhere, but they'll be happy to make you donuts for your gay wedding reception. You ever had a donut from Walmart? Suck. But, I mean, you can kind of see this all unfolding, can't you? She decides not to go to the local bakery because you never know when you're going to run across some bigot Christian, and you figure if anybody will do put that on a cake, then Walmart, by God, will, but no. Merca. Hey, wow. This is pretty huge. Jay Cruzen with a message. I am issuing a $300 challenge right now. He says, you have till tomorrow night to fill it. So it's on the table. 300 bucks. The next 300 bucks that come in, which would be great because we're at zero for tonight. We fell short last night. You get the idea. $300 challenge on the table right now from Jay Cruzen. Your 5 becomes 10, your 10, 20, your 20, 30. Hell, your 300 becomes 6. First $300 that come in get doubled courtesy of Jay Cruzen. Thank you, Jay Cruzen. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully that will happen. Well, it'd be nice if it would happen in the next hour and 8 minutes, but if it happens in the next 23 hours or so, 22 really, well, Jay Cruzen says that's okay too. So hopefully this will not pass by us. It is indeed 8 minutes before the hour. You know how to get to the PayPal interface. It's under the tab Contribute at headonradionetwork.com. If you don't want to go there, you can just go to PayPal and get into your own account and use the send to is bobkincaid@gmail.com. That's the address that's tied to the PayPal interface that's tied to the horn. And just click sending money to friends and family, and away you go, and you won't have to pay the transfer fees. Nice, huh? So, like I said, we hadn't even touched any of the stuff from last night. But I have a feeling we're about to. I've got a story here that in the chat room, our buddy, labor man, Gary, asked if I had seen. I told him yes, we hadn't gotten to it yet. And I don't know the extent to which this flew under the radar, because we don't have a lot of for-profit media here. But it's a deeply disturbing story for anyone who has ever availed themselves of the mental health system in this country. The report came out in April, authored by Stephen Solds, Nathaniel Raymond, Stephen Reisner, Scott Allen, Isaac Baker, Alan Keller, and reviewed by Jean-Maria Arrigo. These are all clinical psychologists, professors of medicine, people who know the field of which they speak. And it has to do with the way the psychological community behaved when
George Bush decided to start his war against the people of Iraq. And what happened even before then, when George Bush's administration decided they wanted to start torturing people. It will be a long damn time, I hope, Jesus, I hope, before this country does anything nearly as dirty, filthy, rotten, evil, underhanded, and sleazy as we have done to the people we chose to torture, many of whom were innocent of everything. In the report, it begins, this report analyzes emails from the accounts of deceased RAND Corporation researcher and apparent CIA contractor, Mr. Scott Gerwer. 16 emails were selected for detailed analysis from a larger collection of 638 emails that were obtained by Mr. James Risen, author of Pay Any Price, and a reporter for the New York Times. The emails were provided to the authors for analysis with the approval of the original sources of the emails, and with the agreement that only those selected as most relevant to the scope of the report would be released. All 638 emails were reviewed by the authors. No findings of this report were in any way contradicted by the emails not included. The time frame of the emails analyzed in this report spans 2003 to 2006. This report also includes publicly available information obtained from a variety of sources, including the American Psychological Association's website, released government documents, and reports in the media. Based on analysis of the Gerwer emails and reference to related open source documents, the authors note five key findings related to the American Psychological Association. 1. The APA secretly coordinated with officials from the CIA, White House, and the Department of Defense to create an American Psychological Association ethics policy on national security interrogations that comported with then-classified legal guidance authorizing the CIA torture program. 2. The language, as must needs be, is somewhat sterile and clinical. But what that first paragraph says is that the American Psychological Association, in secret, conspired with the Bush administration to come up with torture protocols. Two, a U.S. government research scientist who had recently served as President Bush's behavioral science advisor is reported to have secretly drafted language related to research inserted by APA officials into the 2005 APA ethics policy on interrogations. While the exact language of the alleged contribution is not known, the section on research aligned that policy with the then classified Bradbury torture memos. Again, a little gobbledygook. They don't know exactly what language was used, but they do know that it gave a tacit approval to torture. Done, you might recall, in our name. The Bradbury memos directed health professionals to research and assess the supposed safety, efficacy, and health impacts of the enhanced interrogation techniques. Jesus. Those plain, sterile words hide such a litany of horror. Almost endless torment. Situations which left the victims praying to whatever God
for death. Treatment that reduced their brain to soup, defeated their ability to be cognitive human beings. The memos were introduced at a time when CIA Office of Medical Services personnel were protesting the expanded involvement of health professionals in helping determine the legality of the techniques. The CIA didn't like having anybody from the outside looking in on their filthy business. Not to worry. This was the APA. And they were going to be good friends. Very good friends. The APA had numerous contacts with CIA contract psychologists Drs. James Mitchell and Bruce Jessen, starting in at least 2003. You might remember these are the two clowns, the two vicious, bloody, miserable, arguably felonious clowns. No, not clowns. Sadists who were paid millions of dollars to develop a torture routine. Starting in at least 2003, including contacts related to interrogation techniques, at least one senior APA official was informed of their clandestine role at the CIA related to interrogations, yet APA has consistently denied such contacts. Oh, look. In other words, the APA lied. APA did not disclose Dr. James Mitchell's past APA membership when it released its 2007 statement in response to journalists' revelations regarding Mitchell's role in abusive interrogations. Again, you can substitute the word torture. Nor did APA include such information in its letter to the Texas State Board of Examiners of Psychologists in 2010. APA staff sought to obscure past contacts with the CIA and with Mitchell and Jessen and their firm, Mitchell, Jessen and Associates. Despite substantial contact between the APA, the White House, and CIA officials, including the over 600 emails noted in this report, there is no evidence that any APA official expressed concern, not even concern. Not an iota of misgiving over mounting reports of psychologist involvement in detainee abuse during 4 years of direct email communications with senior members of the U.S. intelligence community. What does it all mean? Evidence of apparent widespread and secret complicity between senior APA and U.S. government personnel. It means that APA's representations to the public and its members regarding psychologists' involvement in abusive interrogations were false and misrepresented facts. It means that at no point in time did the American Psychological Association ever even so much as bat an eyelash of concern about the torture of these individuals. It means the APA tried to hide its association with Mitchell and Jessen, the millionaire torture charlatans. The Gerwer emails, together with independent documents in the public record, demonstrate that the APA's secret coordination with the Bush administration both generated and critically shaped APA's 2005 ethics policy on interrogations. The enterprise extended over many months and implicated numerous members of the APA senior staff, along with board members and the APA board itself. Jesus God. If you want to read that report, well,
to the original story, psychologists met in secret with Bush officials to help justify torture, colon, report, by Rhea Jalabi at The Guardian. There is a link there. To the PDF. Pardon me. Well, by God, it's gotten warm. The little flying stinging creatures are out there. Well, that was unprofessional. Ouch. Well, I'm just glad I didn't scream. But no, it's at The Guardian. Rhea Jalabi, the author, the PDF link is there. And you can sit and read it at your leisure and your horror. And when you're done reading it, you can ask yourself, why are Miller and Jessen not in prison? You can ask yourself, why isn't Dick Cheney in prison? Why isn't George Bush in prison? You can ask yourself all kinds of questions along those lines. And if you come up with an answer, I'll be mighty grateful if you'll share it with me. Because I can't come up with an answer. We actually have a worldwide body of agreed upon rules of law and conduct that say that every name that I just mentioned should be in prison. We call them war crimes. We call them crimes against humanity. And by the way, let me run a little bit off the path here real quick. Do me a favor. Don't anybody go wondering aloud or suggesting online or via social media, hey, Bernie, how would you feel about convening a war crimes tribunal against Bush and Cheney? Don't do that. Now, I'm not the guy who goes around telling you what to do and what not to do, but please, just this once, don't do that! Some of us would like for Bernie to have a fighting chance. And nothing would tank that faster than somebody badgering him about whether or not George Bush and Dick Cheney and the rest of that filthy, bloodthirsty, blood-soaked, miserable, murderous crowd should be charged with war crimes. You know they should be. I know they should be. There are legal scholars far in excess of any knowledge all of us together have combined who know they should be, but all of us know one thing. It ain't never gonna happen, no matter how badly we'd like for it to happen. So pretty please, don't ask that question. But I said at the beginning of this account, this is disturbing for anyone who has ever accessed, or at least since 2003 accessed, the mental health system. Now, maybe I was wrong. Because one of the central tenets of this is that the American Psychological Association lied through its stinking, miserable teeth to its own membership. So maybe they didn't know. But the managing, certifying, licensing body, I mean, okay, so people are, they're licensed through the state, but you get my idea. This is the same thing as the AMA or the American Bar Association. this is it's deeply disturbing because we are reminded that the after effects of our war crimes, of our crimes against humanity in Iraq, are going to reverberate down the decades. And perhaps even down the centuries. Our torture regime in Iraq may have finally put paid to whatever good reputation we ever had. As Tim from L.A. notes, you know there are two APAs, the American Psychological Association and the American Psychiatric Association. Yes. One's a Ph.D., one is for psychologists who are masters or PhDs. That's the Psychological Association. The other's MDs and DOs. And the American Psychiatric Association found the torture disturbing, Tim notes. I wonder why the polar opposite obtains. Both know that torture can do harm to someone's psyche. Was it money? Was it fame? So, yeah, attribution is important. I'm trying to remember what we used. I think we used Turabian when I was in college. Can't recall. But it's a very real problem that will not have any solution. All they can do is put this report out and note how skeevy, how low down, how dirty, how outrageously awful was the behavior of the American Psychological Association, and hope that maybe it'll never happen again. But then again, hope in one hand, in the other, and see which one fills up first. Right? This is, by the way, nothing short of amazing. Jay Cruzan's challenge has been met and then some. Jay Cruzan's challenge has been doubled. And I want to thank Bob in Texas and I want to thank Mary in California. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Thomas. That takes a lot of sweat out of the equation. That's huge. And all of us appreciate it. And it means, hey, no Limbaugh reruns. So thank you all very, very kindly. This really is how we stay on the air. The only one. It seems like lately we've spent a lot of time on issues related to police abuses, police killings, a lot of time on the religion industry and their excesses. And there's been a little bit of talk, you know, we've talked some about Bernie. We've talked some, you know, periodically I try to remind people that we've still got that, Credo still has the petition for the AIC Act out there. And they really do. Act.credoaction.com. Sign it, please.
Support the AIC Act. You'll find it if you go to the page. We're coming up on 100,000 signatures. It's been promoted by The Nation and by Daily Kos. Thank you to everyone who's participated, and thank you to everyone who is still sharing it around. And having said all of this, it is easy to get sort of, and I'm ashamed of myself over it, but out of sight, out of mind, as regards to the ongoing, because it ain't over, disaster at Fukushima. A disaster that may well wind up affecting the ability of this species to continue on the planet. And I read this one story originally posted by Alan Combs over at his website, Liberal Land. And it begins, a small amount of radioactive water. And the minute I read that, I went, wait a minute. How small is a small amount of radioactive water? Because that term strikes me as being extremely fluid. No pun intended. A small amount of radioactive water has leaked from a storage tank at Japan's tsunami-crippled nuclear reactor. Because I think if you went into any further depth for descriptives on the reactor, the first paragraph would just terrify people so much they couldn't continue. But I couldn't help thinking, and no, I'm not comparing, because they are not even remotely comparable except for the fact that they a little bit are. I immediately couldn't help thinking about the Freedom disaster back here in almost level West by Coal, Virginia, Stan, in January of 2014. You might recall that they had a leak from a tank. Methylchlorohexane methanol. I haven't said it in a while. Was leaking out of the tank, and the workers there were trying to dig a ditch and use sandbags to hold the poison back. Well, the reasons that I immediately thought of. Those good-hearted good old boys there in Charleston was because a worker at the facility found a wet patch. It's just a patch, just a wet patch. It was just a wet patch measuring 20 square centimeters. That's 3 square inches, which is a whole lot less than, 10,000 gallons, which is what the Freedom Industries coal suppliers dumped in people's public drinking water supply. But again, we're talking about radiation, so it all gets kind of relative, doesn't it? Because I can't help thinking that a small amount of radioactive water is on a scale there with a little bit pregnant. There was a 20 square centimeter patch under a storage tank for radiation contaminated water. This was found last Friday, according to TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power Company, the operator of the plant and in large part creator of the disaster. Yeah, I know. Tsunami, earthquake. Who puts a nuclear reactor on a fault line? But, who the hell am I? Anyway. Then stuff gets real about, that small patch.
70 microsieverts per hour of beta ray emitting radioactivity far exceed, this is one of those dependent clauses, far exceeding the recommended maximum exposure of 0.11 microsieverts were detected on the surface where the water had leaked. And then the part that made me go, oh, well, hello. TEPCO, meet Freedom Industries. Freedom Industries, TEPCO. Now we got enough for bridge. Workers placed sandbags around the tank to prevent the radioactive water from spreading to other areas, the newspaper said. Now, I don't want to get all Jade Helm on you and say that I don't necessarily believe a word of that. But I don't necessarily believe a word of that. I don't have the mathematical cogitating, ciphering and gazetta skills to figure how many times 0.11 microsieverts per hour, 70 microsieverts per hour is, with 0.11 being the maximum exposure. I mean, that'd be roughly 10 times. 700 times about, if you round down to 10, 0.1 microsieverts. That is apparently a lot. But don't worry, those sandbags will stop the radiation from the leaking tank. Right? Sure. Why not? Is it just me? Or does that give you the horrors too? The leak was detected on the same day that tests were launched in preparation for the eventual construction of a 1.5 kilometer long frozen soil wall. Really? Around the number 1 to number 4 reactor buildings, a project aimed at preventing further leaks of radioactive water into the sea. Well, it's a good thing, not having more radioactive water in the sea, right? Just as a reminder, 70,000 people who lived near the Fukushima plant are still unable to return to their homes due to the dangerously high radiation levels. And the local cattle farming, farming and fishing industries have become, well, non-existent, and will probably be non-existent for the foreseeable future, meaning probably a time measured by geologic fucking epochs. Oh, God. So, if they found the wet patch on Friday morning, how long was the wet patch there? And if it was 3 square inches, but it was wet, how many cubic inches or cubic centimeters was it? Was it on dirt? Was it on concrete? How far does radiation travel into concrete? You get my meaning here? Again, I don't want to go all Alex Jones. Ron in Canada noting, Bob. Thank you, Ron, for not violating the not violating the trademark of the other Ron and Raleigh, and saying Bob, Bob, Bob. Ron in Canada says, Bob, once those tuna are cleaned and shipped, you'll never know they had three eyes and swam in circles. I almost wanted to laugh at that until I realized it was true. And here's the thought, and I don't necessarily know where it goes. Has anybody asked this one? What impact does the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, what does that have? What's the impact relative to Fukushima? I mean, let's say Japan signs on, we sign on, it gets all ratified and stuff, and fast tracked and underhanded and whatever. If Japan wants to ship radioactive waste from Fukushima to the United States, assuming they haven't already, will the TPP just grease that pig? I'm just saying it probably deserves to be thought about. And maybe this becomes part of transgenerational wisdom. Maybe this is something mothers tell daughters and daughters tell granddaughters and granddaughters tell great-granddaughters, and great-granddaughters tell great-great-granddaughters down through the centuries now, all up and down the Pacific coast and all around the Pacific Rim, from the Mexican and United States and Canadian coasts across and down and around to Japan and Korea. And you get my idea? Because there's plenty to be worried about. And really, when I read that story and I started thinking about the TPP, I got a little stressed out. Because, not to be mean or anything, but I'm pretty sure folks in the U.S. don't want radioactive waste. But remember, this is Merca. This is Merca, where everything can be had if there's a or done if there's a profit involved. We're already a theocracy. We worship holy profit with an F, not a PH. And so if amalgamated, unified Radioactive Waste Corporation of America says they're going to create some jobs, well, hell, put it on a boat and ship it over. We'll put it up a holler somewhere in Appalachia or in a mountain out west. Hell, maybe we'll drop it in the single largest freshwater source, one of the largest in the world. Well, maybe we'll just put it in barrels and drop it to the bottom of Lake Superior. How about that? Because I don't trust them, do you? Not if they can have an IPO on the stock exchange and maybe get Alpha Natural Resources about to be vacated seat. Hell no, I don't. And, of course, the boys on Wall Street aren't gonna go living near any. And you think I'm kidding? You know that, among other things, the coal ash waste that comes from the combustion of coal and gets caught up in these great big flimsy ass settlement ponds all over the United States, you know that stuff's radioactive, right? in addition to being full of arsenic, cadmium, barium, mercury, lead, manganese, magnesium, beryllium, aluminum, pick one. Well, do you remember? Because it's so easy to forget. Do you remember a few years back? And our good friend John Woffen was one of the first people to go and see it, and he told us about it on the air. Do you remember the coal ash dam burst on, what was it, the Clinch River leading down to the Tennessee River in East Tennessee? Happened, what, December 24th, December 26th, around in there, a few years back? And John Woffen, the Hurricane Creek Keeper, told us about the great damn big ashbergs floating down the river. Well, where do you... All of that ash didn't sink to the bottom of the river. It was collected up. It was pressed down and shaken together. And they put it on trains. And they sent it to a little poverty community in, I think, yeah, Uniontown, Perry County, Alabama. They called the containers they put them in burrito bags or taco bags. Way back on August the 29th, 2009. The New York Times reported, almost every day a train pulls into a rail yard in rural Alabama hauling 8,500 tons of a disaster that occurred 350 miles away to a final resting place, the Arrowhead Landfill in Perry County, which is very poor and almost 70% black. To county leaders, white folks, the train's loads, which will total 3 million cubic yards of coal ash, are a tremendous financial windfall. A per-ton host fee that the landfill operators pay the county will add more than $3 million to the county's budget of about $4.5 million. It's created more than 30 jobs for local residents. The unemployment rate in Perry County at the time was 17%. A third of all households were below the poverty line. There's no reason to think that that number has substantially changed. They got 1,000 job applications for those 30 jobs. John Woffen went down there, too, and tested. Yeah, the damn thing was leaking, the poison was leaking out into the lives of people who happen to live in Perry County, Alabama. Back then, Mary Gibson Holly, who was 74 years old and a retired teacher and black, said, "Money ain't worth everything. In the long run, they ain't looking about what this could do to the community if something goes wrong." I was mistaken in one regard. Most of the county leadership are not white folks. But they said the ash is perfectly safe, and they said that criticism has been fostered by outsiders or other counties that wanted the toxic coal ash for themselves.
That's okay. A few years from now, the problems will be much more real. Because, see, you can't say something that's chock full of arsenic and mercury and a whole host of the heavy metals portion of the periodic table of the elements is completely safe. And then, of course, there are the ponds that ruptured in the first place, which were unlined. So that crap had been leaching into the soil and the aquifer for years, right there near Kingston, Tennessee. Robert Bamberg, identified in the New York Times story as a white catfish farmer. I don't know if he farms white catfish or he's a white guy who's a catfish farmer. No help there. Is the organizer of Concerned Citizens of Perry County. That group identified 212 residences within 1.5 miles of the toxic waste site. He said, "We're being taken advantage of by several groups of powers that be. There's a sense among the population that we've been thrown under the bus," and you have, and the bus is very toxic. So it's worth paying attention to. You just don't know. What else? As we roll toward the end of the evening, thank you very kindly to everybody who matched and exceeded Jay Cruzan's evening challenge. Thank you very much. I wanted to get to this story because it was some damn fine journalism. Only that wasn't it. That's some right-wing asshattery, which we will save for another day. Since we're talking about toxic waste, a little follow-up on Freddie Gray. Because Freddie Gray's life, as much as the right wing did to smear it, was pretty much hell on earth from beginning to end, and most folks don't know that. When they were just little people, Freddie and his mama and his sister lived in a row house in Baltimore, owned, of course, by a wealthy slumlord. And that row house was full of lead paint. When they were children, Freddie Gray and his two sisters, were tested for lead levels in their blood. They lived in the row house for 4 years in their childhood. And when their blood was tested, it was found to have shocking, dangerous levels of lead. There was a lawsuit in 2008. It was handled
by a law firm whose only practice is filing lead paint lawsuits against slumlords in Baltimore. Ruth Ann Norton is an advocate for lead poisoned children in the Baltimore area. She said, "This is the toxic legacy of lead-based paint." She's a founding member of the Maryland Lead Poisoning Prevention Commission. She said, "Our kids are ill-equipped to stay in the classroom, finish school. They're very unlikely to go on to higher education. They're less likely to be able to hold a job. They're less equipped to be able to overcome the poverty and other circumstances that pull them down. Children with lead poisoning will have defects, regardless of whether their parents are nice or not." The law firm that represented the Grays is headed by a lawyer named Evan K. Fallenberg. They have recovered over $100 million in lead paint suits from slumlords in Baltimore. And so when they slimed and sleazed Freddie Gray, the right wing, you know, Fox News, TV, Radio Rwanda, and any number of other smear sites, they didn't take into account people like Stanley Roeschkind. Stanley Roeschkind owns a number of corporations, or heads a number of corporations. And owns hundreds of rentals in Baltimore. Oodles of which have had lead paint lawsuits associated with them. Because it was easier just to collect the rent and occasionally pay a settlement than it was to eradicate the problem. Because, see, no matter how many people carry banners that say Black Lives Matter, they don't. Not to the Stanley Roeschkins of the world. It's interesting that in this Baltimore Sun article, Ryan Naugle, who was one of the lawyers for the lawsuit against Roeschkind by the Grays, said, "Particularly in a Baltimore lead paint case, you're thrust into a person's life. I remember working on those depositions and feeling like I had a good understanding of who these people were and the challenges they faced. Regardless of who I represented or what the issues were, I have nothing but sympathy for Ms. Darden," that's Freddie Gray's mama, "and her other surviving children, and my heart goes out to them as a human being for what they're going through." Eventually, the settlement apparently enabled them to move to another home, but the damage was done. And during the course of the litigation, it was argued that it was because of drugs, or it was because they were ignorant, or they didn't have proper nutrition. Each one of the siblings of Ms. Darden, or not siblings, children of Ms. Darden, had lead levels in their blood above 10 micrograms per deciliter. That's the base threshold for lead poisoning in under Maryland law. Get this, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that anything above 5 milligrams per deciliter is cause for concern. It above twice. Freddie Gray had between 11 milligrams per deciliter and 19 milligrams per deciliter in six tests conducted between 1992 and 1996. And poor people don't just sit there and hear, you know, you've got a lead poisoning problem and do nothing about it. They tried to do something. Experts told Ms. Darden that the children should be on certain diets that are iron and calcium rich. That helps prevent the amount of lead absorption in the body. The children's stepfather, Richard Shipley, said, "We kept them on a pretty nice diet. I did because I did most of the food shopping." And Gloria, their mother, he said, was an excessive cleaner. So Freddie Gray was born behind the eight ball and never got out. Lead poisoning will ruin a brain, especially a developing brain, especially a child's brain. So when white wingers throw around words like thug, they really tell us a lot more about themselves than they do about the people they're trying to describe. Because Freddie Gray wasn't a thug. He was just another throwaway, spat out of the maw of the money machine that is capitalism. That's all. That's all. You want to read the story, it's at BaltimoreSun.com. Beginning of Freddie Gray's life as sad as its end, court case shows. Turns out a lot of people had a hand in the killing of Freddie Gray. The Baltimore Six just finished the job. Run over to the phones. Is that you, John?
Yeah, it's my little fat butt. You know, your conversation tonight was very interesting and very important. And I don't know if anybody has it, but if you ever happen to have a chance to that Cosmos show that was on a couple years back with Neil deGrasse Tyson, there was an entire episode which revolved around that lead poisoning business. And the guy that discovered it, because he was out looking for, trying to find the age of the Earth, and about how radioactive materials degrade and become lead. And so he was having such a hard time trying to find out because it was being contaminated all the time. And he eventually finished that project, but that got him going out, and he traveled the entire world. I mean, he tested in Antarctica, he tested everywhere. And he eventually found out that, you know, when the oil companies and stuff started putting, and it's a big long word, and I don't remember what it is, but it's tetrahydro, blah, 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 that they start putting in gasoline to cut out the knocking and make the engines run smoother. That stuff just burned up and went into the atmosphere and everything else and had all kinds of deleterious effects. And I read a study some years ago that said that the conclusion of the study was that the fact that the generation of people that grew up during the years when lead was being added to fuel and paint and everything else to, and you had the little, commercials about the lead soldiers and what have you. They said that was the generation that caused the big crime wave of the 70s and early 80s, because their brains were poisoned. And then once they figured out that lead was such a bad thing and they started pulling it out, the crime rates have been dropping ever since. You know, for all the screaming and hollering that everybody does about crime and everything, we have one of the most crime-low societies in history. And they believe that that's one of the main reasons, is that, you know, a lot of the frustrations and the low attention spans and the bad emotions and stuff like that is all, you know, because their brains were damaged from lead poisoning. And
it wouldn't surprise me in the least. And in fact, there's a toxic bill that I don't even know, John, if it would be possible to statistically or chemically analyze it. I mean, only after the creation of the EPA under Richard Nixon's administration did we even start thinking about air pollution. And so for all those generations, see, all that toxic goo that goes into those ash dams that wind up breaking and going into rivers and winding up in landfills in Alabama, well, that stuff just used to go right out of the stack.
Yeah,
which means that people breathed it.
Yeah, well, that's capitalism.
And that's mercury.
For you, yeah, that's capitalism for you. As long as it doesn't show up on the freaking accounting sheet. If they, you know, it's, you know, the poisoning of Appalachia, the ash dams, the lead paint stuff. If you actually get it, it's like the tobacco settlement. These people are so quick to want to get these products out on the market and sell this stuff and all the wonderful, all the great wonderful things, and then they find out 25 years later that, oh, shit, we're killing people or we're poisoning them or they're, you know, it's, you know, people complain about the GMO scares and stuff. Scientifically speaking, yeah, it's very possible that GMOs are not that big of a deal. But we've had too freaking long a history of advances that have been created by these companies being pumped out into the marketplace without really knowing what they do. And then a generation later, it's, well, we didn't know. Yeah, but you people profited from it. Your guys for Alpha Resources and with Duke Energy.
Yeah, there's a real Lulu to consider. So Alpha Natural Resources, at the height of its powers, was trading as high as, I think, $70 a share.
Yeah. Well, now it's trading at a dollar and change, but what about all those sons of bitches that got their bonuses, got their big paychecks, but they're retired, they're out of the business, or they cashed their stock, they've sold out. They saw the writing on the wall, and it's all done. But they profited. And these corporations do this all the freaking time. They privatize the profits and they externalize the expenses.
And let's see if I can make this even halfway cogent, John. So it wasn't just Alpha Natural Resources executives and stuff who had those shares of stock at $70 that are now worth 92 cents. You know, there were mutual funds bought into that shit.
Yeah, hedge
there were, you know, there were granny teachers whose teachers' retirement fund bought into it. And what of the people?
Sure.
What of the people who bought and held it? Because it ain't coming back from 92 cents. Where'd the money go? And somebody like our good friend Benedict can probably answer it, but. Where'd the money go?
It went to a nice beachfront property in the Hamptons. It went to the yacht that's sitting in Monaco. It's all out there.
Yeah.
I had a big fight. I had a big ass fight last week with my company and one of the customers. Just to give you an absolute perfect example of this. And now I'll try to edit the names and shit out. But we transport equipment. Now, here I am. My driver's license says I'm a driver. I drive stuff to one place. I get there, and I'm supposed to back it into a dock, and there was all kinds of issues with this place because they didn't want to free their docks, and that was a big deal. But part of the contract, they had a little sentence in there that says driver must unblock equipment. We had wooden four trailers, and they come in with a hair gun, and they got these little four, you know, like anything from, you know, lawnmowers to ATVs to forklifts and stuff, and they'll block the tires. and they'll take a piece of softwood, they'll stick it there, and they'll take an air gun. Bam, 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 bam. Power nails. By the time you're finished, they've got three around each tire, and you've got 10, you know, 5, 6, 7 pieces of equipment. Okay, fine. Little thing in the thing says, oh, driver must undo the blockage. Cool. You get to the place, they hand you a little small hammer and a little small piece of, crowbar and say, go ahead and unblock it. And they explain it very simply. Their guys working inside their building, when they do something, they have to bill that time off on a ticket somewhere. But since I'm the driver and I'm not paid to be there to do labor work, but I'm required by the contract to write it, I have to do that for free. Customer service.
Jesus.
So you sit there and, you know, so now I'm in, you know, me and my company are, we're butting heads and we'll see how it breaks down, but I spend 5 hours. And again, I'm no big fat guy. I'm fairly fat, but I'm not, you know, and if I start swinging around huge sledgehammers and I damage a piece of equipment, then whose butt's in the line? Oh, but we can't help you because we can't bill it out on, because we gotta pay for it. Well, why do you pay me? Well, we don't, you know, it's part of your contract. Capitalism, baby. Free labor. It's just like that, just like you were talking about that Walmart person. Workers are so afraid now. Unemployment rate high. God, they can't have a fucking job. So they'll take whatever freaking stuff comes down the pike. But the bastards who do the investor class, your alpha resources and all that stuff, they get to play around with money and get paid stacks on stacks. And nobody gives a damn. And, it, you know,
yeah.
So you got your Mr. Gray there. He's an example of exactly what happens. He is a statistic in today's society. Poisoned from the time he was born. He probably, like most kids, sticks shit in his mouth all the time when he was a kid. You know, any piece of flaked paint that fell off the wall, he stuck
well,
in his mouth.
But you don't even have to do that. It gets aerosolized. All kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, some of this may go back to actually, you know, old toxic lead plumbing. I mean, that's why slums are slums, right?
Yeah, and that's the way it is.
Hey, John, I hate to say it, but okay. I got to get out of here. We are right up against it.
It's my fault. I tried to call earlier and then got busy. Sorry about that. Catch you later.
All right, later, John. Bye now. And it is time to get out of here. Thank you all of you, each and every one of you, for responding so magnificently to Jay Cruzan's challenge. Thank you very, very much. We will be back tomorrow evening with Prayer Meeting Wednesday and a special conversation that I think that you will enjoy at the beginning of the program. I hope you'll be around for it. Thanks to all of you who keep this program on the air and have kept it on the air for, yea, verily, truly, these many years. You're the only reason. And thank you to all of you who spend your time engaging in this conversation in whatever way that you do. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.ORG. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.